I actually started when I was at school because I had an uncle who had a sheep run in Deep Stream, which is near Middlemarch. And Deep Stream is the water supply for Dunedin. And I used to go up there all my holidays. And I became a bit of a, I suppose I was a bit of a loner because I used to love it. And I had a horse and I had my dog and I used to go rabbiting and all over the mountains and hill country. It was part of the east end of the Rock and Pillars, which is quite a big mountain range in the Middlemarch. We were part of the Lammerlors, the Downy country that went down into Deep Stream. And that's where he had a sheep run. So that's where I got the feeling. And I just loved the country, couldn't be bothered with town. Finished school, and I'd, what, 10 years of school. Yeah, about 10 years. I was the fifth form. Wasn't a particularly keen student, but I loved this life. And he said to me, my uncle, said, "How would you like to get into the wool business?" And I said, "Well, I'd love it." He said, "Well, we'll see what we can do." So the first job I had was working at Rockland Station when they it's a big station that they shore for 6 weeks in those days. No blade shearer. They had about 12 blade shearers. And that was my first introduction in how the wool industry works. And I camped up with the shearers and had me old swag. And I must have been about 17, I suppose, 16, 17. And then he said to me, "I'll go and see Donald Reed," because in those days farmers were great contacts with mercantile firms. They did all their business with mercantile firms, if you remember. Reed Farmers and Wrightsons and Dalgetty's. But he was a great Donald Reed man. And they said, "Oh, yeah, we'll go down to the store and see if there's an opening." So there was an opening, which I took. But it was only a summertime job. They put you off in the winter. So that wasn't very satisfactory for me. So, because I had to get a job in the winter. So I got into National Mortgage, their wool store, which I stayed to until I left. But that's really where I learned. Those days you were sort of self-taught by older gentlemen that knew the wool trade. They would pass on their information. So that's where I learned it from. And I used to look at these wool buyers that came around. In those days was a wool sale, there was 45 different buying firms. Now there's about a dozen, I think, because it's all done by computers and things. But in those days it was all, manual. People came. So there was probably, each wool sale there'd be about 90 fellas go through the wool store. And I used to look at them and think, wouldn't be a bad job. And I got an opportunity of going to Bradford, where if you went to Bradford in those days, well, you were made. That was, if he'd been to Bradford, he knew everything. But I wasn't allowed to go. My parents said, "No, you're not going to England on your own." So that was the end of that. I didn't go. And then, out of the blue, I read an ad in the paper that said they wanted a country wool buyer in Waimate. So I applied for it, see, and it was an organisation from Wellington who had several outlets. And he supplied the truck and the store, and we took over and ran the business, which was a great start for young fellas that had no money. So I applied and he talked to me. He said, "Well, you sound pretty good. We'll go up and have a look." So I went up to Waimate in 1954, I think it was, in the winter time. And he booked me into the Waimate Hotel. He said, "There's your truck." The wool store was an old band used to be a Silver Band Hall or something. That's the hall store. And I didn't have a driver's license. We had no power. So. And I think I had about 250 quid. So we went over to the bank. I don't know how the bank accepted it. He said, oh, yeah, well, that's all right. He said, and they covered my buying accounts, this outfit, see. So away we went, and I started buying wool from the next morning, sort of thing, in the truck, because I had a driver who stayed with me for probably 12 months. And he said, I think you're right now. I said, you can take over. So I'd learned to drive by then and got my license. Because you had to have a lot of cash behind it. I mean, it was a cash buying business. That's why it became popular with the farmers, was that you bought all and paid for it. Whereas everything else, you had to wait for a month for your money, sort of thing. And I stayed at the pub. Dennis Vincent owned the pub. That was before I got married. Well, I lived there, see. And Dennis was an ex-bank manager. And unbeknown to me, I used to get the cash off him in the morning out of his safe. And I'd give him a cheque, you see. And he'd say, have you sold any wool lately? And I said, well, there's wool going away today or tomorrow. And he'd keep the cheques until the money went into the bank. I didn't know that, but he did. That's what he did. So we had a lot of help from the way. He just loved, he knew what I was doing, and he had great faith in what I was doing. And all those little things were where you get your start from. My area was from Amerima all the Waitaki River. The Waitaki River base knows me a lot. It has done a lot for me, you know. And the Hacker Valley, it's a big valley that goes way up and towards Mount Cook. And I reckon I had half the valley at one part, but those times. And I'd built up a great business. I didn't want to get involved too big because I enjoyed my life. I had a wonderful life. And I was completely independent. I didn't have any responsibilities of staff, just me and my wife. You know, we, within reason, you could do whatever you wanted to do. But you had a shed full of dags, and you'd take about 20 ton of dags away in one load. I mean, with my little truck, you'd be up and down the road all day, but old Ted used to just send about four fellas in. He say, you shout them hoist and chips for tea, he said, and we'll be right. And he's, what I was going to say was, this fella was telling me once, he said, Ted Layton, who owned the transport, said to me, see that fella over there, he said, that was me. He said, he would have the best business in Waimate. So that's where we, how we developed it. But I just loved the life. And, you know, when I got in the truck, the world was my oyster. And driving up the Waitaki River in the mornings, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock in the morning, sunrise, and all the mountains behind you. Beautiful. Mm. And we just stayed in Waimate for, I worked till I was 75. And I actually self-taught myself to wool class. I had a great friend, Glenn Carey Station, Charlie Davis, and he said to me, we're going to start classing our wool in the shed. He said, you better come and do it. I said, well, I've never done any shed class. And I hadn't been in the wool store, like I'd been buying wool for, that must have been about 1970s, I suppose. So I'd had 20 years of going around the countryside. So I said, righto, we'll have a go. And away we went. And oh, great success. I had no trouble at all. And I became, so sort of a sought after merino class. You know, you soon get a name for yourself. But, and I did a lot of clips around the Marama and Haka and back of Waimate. And I did them right up until I finished. Birchwood and Ben Evan. We topped the sale for New Zealand with the Birchwood 1 year with the merino clip. But I concentrated on the merinos. I loved the merinos. And you can cast merino wool to within a micron. Each bin is a micron more than the other. 16, 17 microns, 18 microns, 19 microns. Quite an art.
Fingertips.
That was the things you learn. Was an old fellow in National Wool said, if you're tarsing, he said, don't rely on your eyes because your eyes get tired. Because the concentration all day of looking at a very fine fibre, you know, you get a bit stressed out, not stressed out.
Strain.
And he said, fingertips the story. Well, I had that little secret, which I use, and I still do this with my fingers. Yeah. And you can feel.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately you pick up a fleece, you can feel, you can almost say what it is without looking at it. Just with the feel. That was a wonderful thing that I was told. Well, I had been handling wool all the time, you know. I mean, it wasn't as though you just, like you were picking up wool and roughly sorting it in the shed or something like that. But when I was in the wool store, in National Wool in Dunedin, he said to me, they were great old fellows. They used to pass off little tips.
Mm.
And I always used that, and it was very successful, but it works, no doubt about it. Because when people go off the beam, and a lot of, they had a lot of trouble with some people, they would start off all right in the day, but they couldn't still have the same control at the end of the day as you did at the beginning of the day, and they'd float a bit from 17 to 18 and they'd be looking and saying, now I'm not sure whether that's 18 or 17, because you get confused, see, but with the fingers you're always right. Amazing. I just love the life. I've got a history. Me and the old cockies, we used to get into some awful trouble. That was part of the game, was we loved the life, drank plenty of whiskey. That was part of the friendship, was most of them were all my, you know, became friends. That was the great part, a great thing about being independent, that I finished up, you'd only go to clients that you liked and who liked you. I mean, if you work for somebody, you've got to go and see this fellow, and you've got to go and see that fellow, and you probably hate his guts, but you've got to go and see him or he hates you. But I had all the ones that I'd sort of sorted out. The great success was the return servicemen. They really made me, because it was the years that were... See, I started in about 1954, and they were just getting settled into farming. If you were right and did the job properly, you were there for life. You were their man, and that was it. And then you got into the high country, and you got into the old school, and you got one or two of them, you were right. The word went around. And you're either in or out with those fellas. Generations. Original style. Yeah. They were characters. But they were sort of all getting established too. So all those Mackenzie country and Maramapullas, they were Scottish bred, and they'd come over, they were shepherds and whatever, and they took over this big back country, and now they're tremendously wealthy fellas. The son, or they'd be the, some of the most third and fourth generation. But the marina wool boom in the sort of the late 80s and the, right through to about 10 years ago, there were huge prices for merino. I mean, they're getting $3,000 and $4,000 a bale. And like the Camerons at Otamatata had 800 bales of wool every year, for years and years and years. 800 bales. They used to send it to London to sell it, and then eventually they sold it here. They were getting millions for their wool. And very simple lives. And they used to have wars, get the rifles out. Repair Dinkum, they'd get up and the shoot at the rocks, you know, and the bullets would spin off. They'd be out mustering sheep or something. Next thing, pew, be bullet goes. Well, they had, I don't know, they had seemed to have family feuds that went on and on and on. It was the occasion. I mean, if somebody came, they were pleased to see you. That was part of the thing, and if you didn't partake of a bit of fun, you didn't want to know. You sort of, it was part of the ritual, you know. You'd buy the wool, and then you go up to the house and seal the deal, and out would come the bottle, and you'd cruise off home. You'd be 100 miles home to Waimate. Never any worries, never any trouble. But you'd stop at all these places, and they were great friends. We had a wonderful life, really. It was Nanette, my wife, says, you lived the life of Riley, boy.